Welcome to Nuclear Energy in Korea, a podcast to promote discussion of major issues and challenges in U.S. and Korean nuclear energy. I'm Alan Ahn, and I'll be your host today. I'm here with Mr. Jack Spencer of the Heritage Foundation, director of the Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies, where he deals with a range of issues, including federal spending, taxes, energy and the environment, and regulation. He has also written extensively on nuclear energy policy, particularly on issues of waste management, industry subsidies, and market-based approaches to nuclear power. Mr. Spencer, thank you for your time and speaking with us today.
Great to be here.
Mr. Spencer, prior to your current post as director of the Rowe Institute, you were senior research fellow of nuclear energy policy at Heritage. However, during your first stint at Heritage from 1998 to 2005, you were actually a defense and national security analyst. How did you get involved in nuclear energy issues?
Yeah, so I did a lot of work while I was a defense and national security analyst on nuclear weapons issues, and more specifically on submarines, nuclear submarines, and aircraft carriers. That work then sort of led me to my job with Babcock & Wilcox, who is involved in a lot of those sorts of issues. Now, when I got to Babcock & Wilcox, that was when the commercial nuclear energy industry was reemerging and B&W was engaged in those businesses. So I became very involved with B&W as they were trying to reengage in commercial nuclear energy and became very interested in commercial nuclear power issues. Around that same time, if you recall, cap and trade was a big issue. CO2 related policies were something that were popular on the Hill. From a Heritage standpoint, they were interested in nuclear energy because that would fit into that debate. And it was something that Heritage could be more positive on. So I began talking with Heritage about our mutual interest in that. And that was how I came back to Heritage to do nuclear energy issues. They wanted someone who could develop a free market approach to nuclear energy. And I was looking to find a place where I could apply my free market ideas to nuclear energy policy. So it was a good fit.
As you just mentioned about market-based approaches to nuclear energy policy. Could you elaborate a bit more on this and perhaps suggest some initial steps in moving towards a more market-driven nuclear industry, especially given how tightly regulated nuclear power is in so many parts of the world?
Sure. I'm not opposed to regulation for nuclear power, just to be clear. I think, though, that the economics of nuclear energy should be largely deregulated. Nuclear energy has a whole lot to offer, and to me, we've barely scratched the surface of what it could potentially be. And there are, I guess, two schools of thought. One is that the government should have a large role in determining the future of nuclear power, and that government should determine what technologies go forward, should go through a process of providing subsidies in order to so-called kickstart industry, to maybe engage in some number of cost-sharing programs at the Department of Energy in order to move certain technologies forward. I don't think that works. I think that it's proven not to work, quite frankly. I think when you look at any number of programs, that's not the best approach going forward. And essentially what I believe is that there are a number of policy areas, which we can talk about in a while, there are a number of policy areas that prevent nuclear energy from being as successful in a free market as it otherwise could be. The way traditionally that government and industry has mitigated those obstacles is through subsidies, loan guarantees, cost-sharing programs, what have you. In 2005, as people were beginning to take a big interest in nuclear energy again, people understood that these obstacles were there. And so in Energy Policy Act of 2005, a handful of subsidies, there were production tax credits, loan guarantees, cost share programs again, were put in place in order to move nuclear energy forward. The problem was that they didn't do anything to address the underlying problems. And that's the primary one of the primary problems I have with the subsidy nuclear into success approach, is that it takes away any incentive for anyone to do anything about the underlying problems. That's why I think, despite those two Energy Policy Act of 2005 subsidies, we're not that much further along on the progression of commercial nuclear power than we were then. And that's because, despite the subsidies that didn't do anything to address nuclear waste, we're further away from a solution on nuclear waste today than we were before. We have an NRC that, despite there being all sorts of interest in introducing new nuclear technologies, remains capable of only regulating a single technology, that is large light water reactors. And we continue to have companies, nuclear companies, utility companies, coming to Washington to seek subsidies of one sort or another in order to move their technologies forward, rather than working on their spending their own money to come up with better business models in order for their technologies to succeed in the private sector. I don't blame them for doing that. I don't blame them for doing what they're doing. If Washington's there to hand money out to them, if I were running those companies, I may well do the same thing. What we need is a change in policy approach that focuses in on having a regulatory environment that allows all technologies to compete openly and evenly, and we need a nuclear waste policy that gets the government out of nuclear waste and allows waste producers to be responsible for their own waste. Those are the types of things that will allow the real value of nuclear energy to drive that technology forward, rather than the political clout of nuclear energy to drive that energy forward. Ultimately, I believe that technologies, be them energy or otherwise, that are the least promising commercially are the ones that need the most help from Washington. I think it's unfortunate that nuclear is in that Washington category, because I don't think it has to be. If you look at enrichment, enrichment at one time was a government-run operation. Government got out of the enrichment business, or at least it was supposed to get out of the enrichment business, but at least it allowed for private competition in the enrichment business, and we see enrichment being commercially successful. We see the nuclear reactors themselves, as they were deregulated, they became much safer, much more efficient. So as government moves away from nuclear, history shows it works really well. The heavier hand government has on nuclear, the less successful it is. We see nuclear waste policy fall into that category. If you look at all of the problems we've had in this country with nuclear energy or nuclear technology, it all comes out of government. Though the cleanup problems that we have, those are from the national security complexes, not commercial complexes. The problems we have with uranium mining around the country, none of those occurred because of commercial uranium mining. They all happen as a result of government-run uranium mining. Across the board, it's government who messes up the business of nuclear power, not the business of nuclear power messing up the technology. So that was a long-winded answer, but there you go.
Well, on the topic of government intervention, subsidies, an often heard argument against privatization is that it's just too expensive for a private firm to engage in construction of nuclear plants without these subsidies or loan guarantees. Upfront capital costs are too high, construction times are too long. How do you overcome this issue of the high capital investments involved with nuclear, and how could small modular reactors play a part in addressing this problem?
If nuclear reactors cost too much for the private sector to support them and the risk is too great, then we shouldn't build them. We should not build nuclear reactors because they're cool. However, if you look in our country, there are 5 nuclear reactors currently under construction. Not one is being built with the help of a loan guarantee. So this notion that you need loan guarantees in order to support new nuclear development simply is not true. It's being borne out in Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee today. I think that holds true across the board. I just don't think there's any evidence that nuclear energy needs government help to move forward. To the extent it does, if it does, I believe, and only the market will tell us whether this is correct or not, but I believe that it's because the government imposes so many additional costs on nuclear energy because of heavy-handed regulation. So my theory is essentially this. I'll give nuclear the freedom to operate in a free market, give them predictable and reasonable regulations, and let's see what happens. And let's see if they figure out how to drive costs down. I mean, the South Koreans evidently have figured out how to build a less expensive reactor. The Japanese build them for less than what we do here. So, you know, I don't know how much it's going to cost to build reactors, but right now they cost $7, $8 billion a piece for the first of a kind, or the first ones that we're building here. I mean, I have more faith in American engineering and ingenuity than to think that they will remain that price. You know, as we build, we'll save more and they'll become more competitive. I also know, however, the scourge of subsidies, that if you subsidize reactors at that price, then they will remain at that price. The market is the best tool to push those costs down. This notion that they just cost too much and they're too big, regardless, we see huge capital-intensive private sector projects being built all the time. I mean, whether it's, you know, a mega hotel in Las Vegas or a pipeline, or there's all kinds of stuff the private sector builds that costs billions of dollars. And now people say, well, the utilities aren't large enough to do that. Then maybe the utilities shouldn't be doing it. You know, that's for the market to decide, or the utilities to decide. It's not, that doesn't mean that because a small company who can't afford to build something but wants one real bad, that justifies putting the taxpayer on the hook for building that thing. You know, I would like to have a 6-bedroom mansion, but that doesn't mean that the taxpayer should subsidize me to do that. All of that being said, I am convinced, because we've seen this too, that when a company like a utility that may not be able to afford on its own to build a nuclear reactor, find partners. We see partnerships all the time in order to finance large projects. Nuclear energy is no different. We've seen it in the past. We see it now. It's not like Southern Company is building the Vogtle reactors on their own. They have partnerships. That's how you mitigate risk in a free market. The government has zero role in that, or the government has zero legitimate role in that process. The way SMRs fit into this is, if we had a regulatory environment that allowed the SMRs to come into the marketplace based on their value or their attractiveness to investors, rather than a Department of Energy who determines what sort of technologies move forward, which is the model we have now.
Sure.
But if we had a true free market, true free market environment where the regulatory system itself didn't represent a barrier to market entry, which it is now. But if we fixed that and we were able to get SMRs regulated properly, and they were able to compete with large light water reactors based on their merit, the role that they play, not only do they themselves provide a way to get into the commercial nuclear business with smaller capital outlays up front, but it provides really important competition to the big guys. So it's that competitive environment that I think would lift all the entire nuclear industry. It's that process that we're not seeing be played out as efficiently as what it should be because of government intervention.
Another claim often brought up against privatizing nuclear power is that there are just too many risks in terms of safety, security, and non-weapons proliferation. What measures would you put in place to ensure that standards in these areas are being met? And you may have hinted at this a bit earlier with regards to the regulatory environment.
Yeah, I think that there are two important pieces to this. One is liability. Without getting into Price-Anderson, which I will say, I'm opposed to Price-Anderson. I'm not opposed to repealing it right now. I think that Price-Anderson goes until, I think, 2025. I think it goes till 2025. I would not support it being renewed then. We need to take between now and then to figure out what to do after Price-Anderson. But putting Price-Anderson to the side, I think you have to have properly aligned liability responsibilities. That is that the reactor owners are responsible for what goes on there, that they're liable for. And we largely have that now. People say, well, Price-Anderson undermines that. I don't think that it does. I think that we have a good, strong liability system right now. And the reactor owners and operators are responsible for what happens. If something goes wrong, they will be held liable for that. And it's that system that has given us the safety culture we have in the U.S. nuclear industry. So that's an important part of it. The other part of it is the regulatory system. So when I say we should have a free market approach to nuclear power, that doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want with your nuclear waste, for example, or that you can operate your nuclear plant in an unsafe way. What you need to have is a regulator who has some role in determining what the safety standards are. I'm just not a believer that the federal regulator should be empowered to overregulate the industry. I think that having a strong system of liability, the nuclear industry has the Institute for Nuclear Power Operators, which is a private regulator of sorts. That does a great job. And then combined with the NRC, they all fit together. None of those things preclude us from having an economically free market approach to nuclear power. So just because I say free market doesn't mean no regulation. Though I would be sympathetic to a far reduced regulatory approach to nuclear power, assuming we had a really strong liability regime and a really strong private regulatory regime. So,
going back to this issue of nuclear waste, one of the key points that you often use in endorsing a market-based approach is that this would provide a solution to the back end. And obviously, it's not just the U.S. with this problem, but many other countries with nuclear power. How would market forces help provide a solution to nuclear waste?
Yeah, so right now the system completely disconnects the waste producer with the entity who has responsibility for managing and disposing of the waste, which is the government. So now the private sector can produce all the waste it wants, and it pays the government a predetermined fee, the mill, about $750 million a year, industry-wide, for a undefined service and an unrendered service. So there's no actual pricing mechanism in this system. The entity who should have the most to gain by having a solution, the industry itself, has no responsibility for it. So it gets all the benefits of having a solution without there actually being a solution. And we put the responsibility for managing and disposing of nuclear waste into the government, which is inherently political, and politicians have almost zero benefit to gain by moving beyond the status quo. Anytime any politician does anything on nuclear waste, there's tremendous risk involved with it. And in addition to that, the whole financing system comes through Congress. So even if you were to get everyone on the same page, like we essentially have with Yucca, except for one man, Senator Reed, he's able to stop the whole thing. That's one problem with the current system. And so you have this disconnect between waste producers and the people responsible for it. My belief is by putting the waste producers in, giving them responsibility for nuclear waste, then they have the incentive to come up with a solution. And you can take three steps out the front door of the Heritage Foundation, you'll find someone who represents a legitimate company with a legitimate solution to nuclear waste management. What we need is a system that allows all those different waste managing companies with all their different technologies to compete and to see who can do it best. That's essentially it. But there's a second piece to it that's really important. So by putting the waste producers in charge of managing their own waste, you'll get a solution, because they're the ones who will need a solution in order to continue making money. And we know that there are solutions out there because there are lots of companies working on it all the time. The other big problem I have with the current system is that there's no connection between the front end of the nuclear fuel cycle and the back end of the fuel cycle. So by taking waste out of the business of nuclear power, you essentially leave nuclear power in a state of suspended animation. The technology is essentially in a state of suspended animation, because there's nothing driving the technology forward. There's plenty of money to be made on nuclear plants as they are, and that's fine with everyone. If you put the waste producer in charge of nuclear waste, then the waste producer begins to be concerned about what the waste product is that comes out of the back end of the fuel cycle. If some other technology can give you an easier to manage or more economically to manage waste product, then that will drive the technology in that direction. So today, we'll hear people say, you know, the thorium guys, they'll come around and they'll say, you know, we should be building thorium reactors. the waste is, the reactors are very safe, and there's almost no waste problem, and it's even better than that. We can use existing waste to help power the thorium reactors, and it all takes care of itself. Well, in the current system, that all may well be true. We don't know for sure, and there's so much political heavy lifting that needs to occur because the government's involved in every aspect of it. It's really difficult to get a system like that into place, whereas in a free market system, if everything they say about thorium is true, then that will be bore out in the marketplace, and we would see that unfold. Same thing with, reprocessing versus, like what Areva does versus Yucca Mountain. The Yucca people will often say, reprocessing costs too much. The reprocessing people say, no, reprocessing is the way to go. We can do it affordably, and they have their reasons. So I say, let them compete. If the waste producer is in charge of it, then they can look and they'll make that economic decision. But what would be nice is then maybe GE comes along with their technology and they say, you know what? You can keep doing what you're doing, but we can provide you a reactor and a reprocessing technology that does all that for even less. Now you have real competition. So instead of GE arguing to the government that they can do it better, they're out in the marketplace really making the market will determine if they can do that. But we lose all that under the current system, all that competition that would yield the waste solutions, the technological innovation, the cost reductions. We leave it now to Congress and the Department of Energy, which I just can't imagine a worse system.
If utilities have to be responsible for the waste they produce, some may be concerned that this would increase costs of generation and that this would trickle down to consumers. Is this a serious concern?
Well, does the cost of nuclear power not now? I mean, that's what the cost to consumers is. The cost of producing it trickles down to the consumers, and they pay that amount plus some profit in order to get that product. So if putting them in charge of nuclear waste management increased the cost, then I would argue that the delta between what they pay now for it and what it actually costs is actually a subsidy to the nuclear industry. And they should be paying what it costs. The consumer should be paying what it costs. I don't believe in keeping prices artificially low. So if the current system gives us an artificially low price for nuclear power, well, that needs to be rectified. By the same token, maybe it's artificially high. I don't know. What I do believe, though, is that accurate pricing is critical to any economic system. And like I said way earlier, we shouldn't be building nuclear energy because it's cool. We should build it because it's clean, affordable energy. And it's the entirety of its cost should be represented in what the consumer pays. That's whether it's coal, natural gas, nuclear, wind, or solar, whatever. Subsidies don't work. Let the market decide.
You've criticized the Blue Ribbon Commission report with regards to its recommendations of setting up a Fed Corp as the primary entity responsible for nuclear waste management, arguing that it doesn't address the issue of disconnect between disposal and producers of that waste. In your opinion, in what other areas did the BRC report fall short?
Didn't even mention Yucca Mountain. It did nothing to fix the financing system to introduce accurate pricing. Those are the main. There are three broad criticisms I have of the BRC. The one you mentioned, there's no connection between waste producers and waste management. There's no accurate pricing in the system they set up, so you're still paying a flat fee for an undefined, unrendered service. It does nothing to acknowledge this huge breach of law that currently exists, which is the Nuclear Waste Policy Act says everything goes to Yucca, and they just continue to ignore Yucca. I am a Yucca advocate, but I'm not like I don't believe that we should just be doing Yucca. I think that it should be Yucca plus whatever else. The BRC could have done the nation a far greater service by acknowledging Yucca and giving us a legal pathway to move away from Yucca, if that's what they recommended doing, or saying straight up, we recognize the political difficulty with Yucca, but this is what we think we should do. And when the Secretary of Energy charged them to do everything but look at Yucca, to me it basically tainted the whole report. Not that I think it would have come up with anything different, because it was clearly done in such a way to give the impression of progress while leaving a status quo system in place.
another country with issues on spent fuel management has been South Korea. Korea and the U.S. have long enjoyed a deep partnership in civil nuclear matters. In what ways can the two countries collaborate in finding solutions to their respective nuclear waste management problems?
They need to have a good 1-2-3 agreement. And that by good 1-2-3 agreement, one that allows the South Koreans to pursue nuclear waste management in ways that they think is appropriate for them, without having the United States dictate to them what they should and shouldn't do, but with both sides recognizing the sensitivities with proliferation potential materials. So right now the U.S. position is that South Korea should not engage in any reprocessing or any, basically, any spent fuel, let's just call it processes at all. The South Koreans want to do pyroprocessing. To me, there's a lot of room for compromise there. The South Koreans have stated clearly that they want to pursue an approach. They wanted to develop an approach that doesn't separate out weapons usable materials. The U.S. should jump on that. They should say, okay, that works for us. As long as you're not separating out weapons usable materials, do what you need to do. And as long as you operate within, you know, global standards and norms for nonproliferation, do what you need to do. And the reason that's really important for the United States is because I have almost zero faith, because of our political system, that we're going to come up with a good system, a good nuclear waste management solution. As we're seeing right now unfold in Congress, it's really difficult for people to recognize the bankruptness of the current system and move beyond something that truly is different, something that would work. They continue to try to take the current system and modify it in one way or another without recognizing it needs to be raised and rebuilt. What the potential we have with the South Koreans is, if they are able to bring to reprocessing or to pyroprocessing what they've brought to reactor construction, which is methods of doing it that are extremely affordable, then we could import that here and use that to help us with our waste management needs. And that would be really helpful. Not to mention, there are all kinds of export implications that, you know, if South Korea is able to maintain its cost competitiveness, it will be really important in their ability to market themselves to be able to offer the full array of nuclear waste management services. And unlike enrichment, which is largely available in the global marketplace, nuclear waste management processes are not. So South Korea needs to be able to offer that in order to compete with the French or the Japanese, potentially the Russians, who can offer the full spectrum of services. And it's because of our close relationship with the South Koreans, as they compete and win for business in countries who are looking to get into the nuclear energy business, that'll be a really important channel for the U.S. to continue to have influence on how those third countries build their commercial nuclear programs.
On top of the 123 renegotiations with South Korea, there are a number of other potential 123s on the horizon with countries such as Saudi Arabia, Vietnam. What factors do we need to consider in negotiating and concluding these agreements and ensure that civil nuclear cooperation with these countries continue and promote American standards in safety, security, nonproliferation, and so forth?
Well, I am not prepared today to say whether we should or should not engage with in 123 agreements with any new country. I'm certainly sympathetic to more 123 agreements. I think 123 agreements are a critical tool to doing all of the things that you just mentioned, ensuring they have high nonproliferation standards, high safety standards, and all that. But just to be clear, I'm not ready to say where I am on Saudi or whatever. All of that being said, I think if a country has a strong nonproliferation history, if we have good relations with them, and certainly if they're a democratic country, then it should be a no-brainer to do 123s with those types of countries. I think as those types of things diminish, we need to think longer and harder about how we engage with one-two-threes. That doesn't mean not to do them. There are certain countries in the Middle East that don't meet those standards. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't do 1-2-3 agreements with them, but it does mean that we need to be particularly careful in how we do those agreements. I think the UAE agreement is a great example of how to do one the right way with a country that is a friendly country with us, but doesn't perhaps maintain all of the standards that we would like to see them maintain in areas like democracy and freedom and those sorts of things. So certainly we need to make sure that in countries like that, enrichment and reprocessing become big issues. I'm very open on those technologies being available to free and peaceful countries, but I'm not open to them going to just anyone. So if you're not a democratic, peaceful, free country, you need to be careful about some of those technologies. And so just, we need to tread carefully, not be afraid of doing that. And there's certainly tremendous, I should talk about the tremendous benefit. I mean, there's tremendous benefit to engage in those countries, to engage with those countries on these issues. So we definitely should engage. And we definitely should try to figure out how to work with them on commercial nuclear energy projects.
Mr. Spencer, thank you for your insightful comments and a very enlightening discussion. We hope you enjoyed speaking with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.